This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon, this is The Bigger Picture and I'm Lee Chui Lin. The Foreign Spouses Support Group was founded by a group of foreign spouses of Malaysian citizens. The group campaigns for the advancements of rights for foreign spouses and their children and advocate to raise awareness of the problems facing foreign spouses in Malaysia, which can range from not being able to open a bank account to double charges at government hospitals for any kind of treatment. Today I'm meeting the women behind the group, Bina Ramanan and Asha Lim. Welcome to the show, ladies. So my first question would be, who constitutes a foreign spouse? I think it's a deceptively simple question, you know, but could you fill us in?
A foreign spouse is basically a foreigner who's married to a Malaysian citizen. And so she is non-Malaysian, married to a Malaysian citizen.
So actually, we'd like to use the term non-citizen spouses.
Yes.
Right.
To emphasize that we are not foreigners, but we've made our home in Malaysia, and it's with our Malaysian citizens and children.
I see. Okay. Yeah, that would be an important distinction to draw. Yeah, I can understand that. Can you share with us the current legislation which surround foreign or non-citizen spouses in Malaysia?
Basically, I guess we would come under the Immigration Act of 1959, 63, and that would be the permanent residency status in Malaysia is granted to any foreign citizen under the Immigration Act. And there's recently, I think there was some amendment which is Regulation 16, and it was, I think, amended in 2011, where it says that the DG of Immigration can issue resident pass to spouses and children who are below 18 years may be covered. And also under the Federal Constitution, Article 15 allows for wives of Malaysians to apply for citizenship, and this is for citizenship, after 2 years of being a permanent resident. Okay.
Yeah, so I think one has to clearly understand that when you first come into the country and get married, you have to go to immigration to get a pass as a spouse. And the pass will be on a 1 month basis, then on a 3 months, and theoretically after that it should be the year to year. The year to year is what they call a long-term visit pass. And only when you've had five of those year to year, then you can apply for permanent residency. And that can take umpteen years. And after you get your permanent residency, then only you can apply for citizenship if you so wish. So we're not just thinking about, okay, come into the country, get your PR automatically, and then 2 years after that, you can get citizenship. It's not like that.
No, it's a long process.
Yes. Yeah. Also that men come under different men spouses of Malaysian women. They come under different regulations, so they get citizenship, I think, by naturalization. So if you're not mistaken, they wait 10 years after PR before they can get their citizenship. However, many of us were here in the country. It took us a long time before we could get PR, but we understand that it's faster these days.
Okay. Do you find that many of these, many spouses are actually aware of all these rules and regulations and legislations? Or is it something that you kind of just go through on a, you know, on a year-by-year basis, as you pointed out, instead of thinking about, okay, I understand that this is the law and this is what I have to do?
I think I have a background in law, and I never realized how difficult it was. You know, I met my husband when we were students together, and I just assumed that when we got married, it'd be a simple procedure to just apply for residency in this country. And I had no idea about the legal hurdles, the lack of access to information. I think once I was, this was in my 12th year of application for the long-term visit pass, that the chap who was behind me in the queue said, "Do you know that you can actually ask for a 2-year up to 5-year extension?" And we don't get this kind of information from the immigration officials. So even then, when I amended my form there and then on the spot and asked for 5 years, this is after at least a decade of staying in the country, they only gave me 2 years out of the 5 years I asked for.
However, This happened during our time 10 years ago, but now immigration actually has a lot of checklists and it's really helpful to people. So they actually have some of the regulations there. So if you go to the immigration website and look under pass, you can actually get information, what are the documentation you require and how many years it takes before you can get a PR. So we really recommend that you check out the immigration website, which has some information for foreign spouses.
In the past, why was it so difficult? I mean, we're talking about a difference of, say, a decade. What has changed, you know, in that decade to make these differences?
I think there isn't a kind of overarching immigration policy. And foreign spouses or non-citizen spouses fall into the no man's land between being categorized as a foreigner, foreign worker, and a non-expat. So they didn't know what to do with us. But they failed to realize that if we don't have the ability to stay and to work in this country, there is a huge negative impact upon our Malaysian families. And it stresses, it eventually may stress out the whatever social work system or social benefit system that the country might have. So when we ask for the ability to stay and work, we're not expecting a handout. We just want to be independent. We want to contribute to the economy. And many of us have skills and many of us are trained professionals. Even the ones who are not trained professionals have the tenacity to work hard in order to make a success of their life in this country and to provide for their families, so they're not dependent on any handout.
Earlier, they were, I think many of the spouses were isolated because they couldn't even work. And however, when we got together, because we realized it was taking too long, and in our time, we couldn't work. A foreign spouse could not work. And so it was really difficult. Until 2008, we did not have the right to work in the country. So that was made it difficult, and that made us all come together and see what we could do. In 2000, they had the spouse program, but it was more difficult to be on the spouse program than for an expat to come and work in the country.
You see, if you're an expat, you can come in and work, and your work permit gets process as a matter of course within a relatively short period of time. You can also open a bank account in your own name. You have none of the restrictions that are, you know, we are only allowed to open a bank account jointly with our spouses. In fact, that was the tipping point for me, you know, that I could not open a bank account in my own name, having lived here for so long. And even when I opened a bank account, I had the bank showed me this regulation at Bank Negara, said I could not write out a check for more than $5,000. And I thought, what if I have to pay college fees, you know, which is $10,000 or more? What if I have to buy a piece of property?
And it's a basic right for an independent person to be able to own your own bank account.
Yeah.
Of course it is. Would you happen to know how the plight of foreign spouses in Malaysia, as you're describing, compared to what others may be facing in other countries or internationally?
I think they have rules and regulations, and they have fixed time frames as well. So their rules are very clearly spelled out. And they have the right to work, you know, once they get their green card, perhaps in the US. And it they have rules for even fiancés. They have people in relationships. They have, you know, how you bring in your married spouse in. Well, 2 decades ago for us, there were no rules. We were just told that it was 5 years and we could get PR. But when we went around, even the immigration officers, we were told different stories. So like one person said, oh, you were working, so you can't come on, you know, you can't ask for PR. And at that time, there was this thing that was going around. They said, if you leave the country, then you can't get PR, like even if you went for a holiday. But that was not the rule. You have to just prove that you are living with your husband, you're in the country for on the 5 year pass, a long term
substantial stay. And then at one time they said, yes, you can work, but they made the preconditions for working in the country somewhat onerous. You had to find a company that had paid up capital of
$250,000.
And then the company had to show that they had actually
advertised three times
and so on, which made it pretty impossible for us to find any kind of work.
Is there a reluctance, you know, on the part of the immigration services to simplify this residency process? Because, as you rightly point out, if you're not that expatriates don't have their own set of issues, of course, but it is relatively simpler, you know, in comparison to what you're describing of this year-on-year renewal, of this inability to open your own bank account under your own name. Is there a reluctance then from the part of the immigration services to simplify this process, or to provide more information so that you don't have strange rumors such as, oh, you cannot exit the country?
They are. I think now the numbers have increased. They're probably, we looked at some statistics. So last year it was, in 2010, we realized there were 100,000 spouses. So that would make it incredibly difficult for immigration to actually start processing them. So the rules have somewhat been simplified. In terms of working, you now could get you can get an endorsement to work from immigration. Once you show them your appointment letter, they will chop your passport. So that makes it much easier for many women out there. I mean, many spouses as well. So they just need to find an employer and go to immigration. And I hope they will actually look at the website, because again, these details are laid out there.
I think they haven't addressed their mind to the issue of non-citizen spouses. Because if they would, they wouldn't have to sort of bend over backwards to get programs into place like Malaysia, My Second Home, for us, because we have made Malaysia our first home. And some of us are bringing money into the country in order to make Malaysia our first home. And then they wouldn't have to bend over backwards to get tourists into the country, spend money into the country. Because if we are stationed here and we are happy to be here, we would, of course, invite our relatives and our friends to come and stay. And that would, you know, bring in the tourist cash and so on. So I think they have not address their mind to the benefit any non-citizen spouse can bring into the country, and they haven't counted the equity value.
I'm speaking today to Bina Ramanan, coordinator of the Foreign Spouse Support Group, and Asha Lim, lawyer. And we're discussing foreign, or rather non-citizen spouses of Malaysia and the issues that they're facing. Coming up, we will hear specific problems that foreign spouses are facing in Malaysia on The Big Picture, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
I am a widowed Indian spouse. My late Malaysian husband and I were married for 5 years, and I have been living in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, since February 2006. My husband passed away in July 2011, and I was not even allowed to grieve over the situation, but had to face the trauma of my in-laws trying to chase me away from Malaysia. This was done so that they could claim my husband's assets. I was threatened and harassed by them repeatedly. I was scared, and my insecurity was enhanced due to the fact that I am living in a foreign land where I do not have a PR and also do not have the right to work with the demise of my husband. Still, I managed to engage lawyers and managed to acquire equal rights for myself and my mother-in-law over my husband's assets. Law did its work, but it was not executed in reality because my in-laws are aware of the loopholes in the policies of the country towards foreign spouses and are delaying the process of asset distribution. They are aware that I have a limited time visa coupled with no right to employment here, since I am a widow. They know I will have no other option but to leave the country without being able to claim the rights over my husband's assets. Though I am a graduate, I am without any source of income since July 2011, and it is barely possible for me to survive here and continue with my fight for justice. I urge that permanent residency should be granted to widows like me.
Foreign husbands of the local Malaysian women are one of the least known, unseen, and unrecognized non-citizens of Malaysia. One of the leading concerns for them is to be respectfully blended and accepted in this xenophobic society. Like other migrant workers, they also do not have any legal rights similar to locals due to their status here. Simply put, they are an invisible community living in uncertainty here. The long wait for PR, which is only a permanent resident status and not a citizen like other advanced countries, is one of the leading discontents among foreign spouses. I can sum up my situation in one sentence. The foreign husband should be given citizenship on the basis of marriage to the Malaysian wife within a decent span of time. PR should be granted immediately upon marriage and citizenship within a span of 5 years.
I'm married to a Malaysian who is an abusive individual and gets support in this from his parents and brother. I'm not allowed to talk to my parents or share my problem. In 8 years, I've visited my parents in India twice. As a wife, I believe it is my responsibility to understand my husband's financial situation and not ask anything from him. But I have 2 children, aged 8 and 4. I hoped that one day he would change and learn to respect me for what I am. But my husband continues to get violent whenever we talk about my son going to school or financial matters. He has taken up my 2 children away from me. It worries me that my children are in the hands of a violent person. Now, my legal status in this country is dependent on the man who is abusing me. I feel very vulnerable and victimized that I have to continue this dependency on the perpetrator of the abuse. I cannot get a visa to stay in the country and support my children without his permission. Neither, as a mother, can I give up my children. Shouldn't the law allow for spouses such as myself who are in an abusive marriage to remain in the country and be employed and live a life of dignity with my children?
I have lived in Malaysia for the past 7 years, 4 of which I've been in a marriage to a Malaysian. I originally came to Malaysia to study for my bachelor's degree, and now I am finishing my master's. The main problem I am facing is with regards to my employability. In terms of both internships and permanent jobs, this is despite my being allowed to work under my long-term social visa without an employer's applying for a work permit. I feel it is especially difficult in my field of specialization, finance and banking, because this industry is highly regulated in many aspects, including that of human capital. I am a young person with high aspirations, but these problems are causing me to doubt my abilities and my confidence has naturally eroded.
I'm in a polygamous marriage. I get little financial support from my Malaysian husband, but I can't do anything because my visa is dependent on my Malaysian spouse. I have to take my husband to immigration, otherwise my visa is invalid. I have no means of supporting me and my son by myself. I'm currently undergoing hospital treatment, and I have to pay double charges in government hospitals. I've tried to get social welfare for single mothers, but I was informed that it is only for Malaysians. What would happen to me and my son if I lost my husband? I have no right over my son, as he's Malaysian and I'm not. The law does not take into account that I'm married to a Malaysian and my child is Malaysian. Finding a job is almost impossible for me, even though I have a university degree. The usual reply I get is, "Sorry, we can only employ Malaysians." How am I supposed to teach my Malaysian son to love his country when this country has not looked after his mother fairly? How would you feel if you were me?
I have been living in Malaysia since 1996. I'm a British married to a Malaysian citizen, and we have 3 children, who are now 19, 25, and 27 years of age. All carry a Malaysian passport. I applied for a permanent residency in 2001. I had an interview with regard to my permanent residency in 2006, but I did not hear anything after that, and I continued to get a 1-yearly spouse dependency visa. Following my husband's death in 2011, I inquired about my permanent residency, to be told by an immigration officer that my file was empty and no permanent residency application was even there. I am currently on a 3-month tourist visa, and I am tired of constantly being rejected for no valid reason in the immigration office. Despite marrying a Malaysian citizen, my 3 children being Malaysian citizens, owning my own house here, and being an educated person, as I am a graduate, I find myself at the bottom of the pecking order when being granted permission to live here with my immediate family. Having left the UK more than 17 years ago, I no longer have anything left in that country, and neither do my children. And yet I have no security to stay here in Malaysia either. Without permanent residency, my whole future is insecure. I am not allowed to work here on a yearly social visa either. Despite having my children still living with me at home, I cannot provide for them financially. I still have one child to put through university, but I'm not allowed to work. It is time the Malaysian government recognized our plight.
BFM 89.9, good afternoon. You're listening to The Bigger Picture with me, Lee Chui Lin, and Bina Ramanan and Asha Lim, the ladies behind the Foreign Spouses of Malaysia, the Foreign Spouses Support Group. And what you've just heard are some of the voices here at BFM reading statements issued by members of the group regarding some of the issues that they faced and some of the very real, you know, life problems that have been going on. So aside from what we've just heard, what are some of, you know, these common problems that foreign spouses face in Malaysia, things that we, you know, may not think of, but that you have to live with on a daily basis?
If you want a story, I've met someone who said that her father married somebody from outside of the country and brought her into the country. And then later on, when the children were in their early teen years, or just before the early teen years, he discovered he had cancer. And he kept saying to his eldest daughter and to the children that he had to stay alive in order to finish processing the application for his wife to be able to stay in the country. But because this was at a time when it would take years before the application would be processed, it was year to year. He didn't know whether he would last out the year. And that had a huge impact on the children. And to this day, they never forgot the stress.
What happens is, if you don't get, when without PR, it becomes difficult. Even day-to-day living becomes a challenge. Things that Malaysians take for granted, like going to the hospital, we have to pay double charges, becomes difficult for us even to admit our children into hospital if our spouses, our Malaysian spouses, are not present. We pay double charges to deliver our Malaysian babies in government hospital. Sometimes companies may not be willing to pay EPF because the law on foreigners, any law that governs foreigners actually governs us. So currently, if the foreign investment ceiling for purchase of property is 500,000, then if as a spouse, it will be difficult for us to own a property or co-own a property which is less than 500,000.
Okay. And you were mentioning bank accounts. Has that changed? Is that still something that's extremely difficult?
It is difficult if you're not in employment and you want to open a bank account in your own name.
I see. And I think this is something that many people would feel personally about, you know, as with that story that you mentioned. What happens when the Malaysian spouse passes away or the couple becomes estranged or divorced? What happens to the foreign spouse in that situation? What is your legal status? Because relationships
Do change. Some negatively,
yes,
over time.
Yes, sadly.
Yeah.
So what happens in those situations?
Actually, that's what we are really campaigning for, is for those spouses who are widowed, who are divorced, should be allowed to stay in the country, given PR.
Because, and to look after their Malaysian children.
Yeah. Because what happens in cases of spouses who are in an estranged relationship, the woman has to find a sponsor who's earning 2,000 ringgit per month. And then she's again vulnerable, and this pass does not allow her to work. So how is she going to support her family and live a life of dignity? And the children, what happens is children are Malaysians, and if you cannot go back to your home country, because that means your children will lose the Malaysian citizenship.
No, you're not allowed to take your Malaysian children with you.
Why?
Because the Malaysian citizens. I know of this case where the husband divorced his wife, and the wife was given 24 hours to leave the country and leave her two children who were below the age of 7 behind. And it was only with the intervention of an NGO that they were able to she was able to stay in the country. So it's like sometimes you have these draconian measures just being dumped on the non-citizen spouse when their life circumstances change.
A lot of the pronouns that I'm hearing you both use, she, do women make up the bulk of the group?
Yes. There are more women spouses. I think the men actually give up and they go back to their home country, many of them. Well, there are some who stay here, and we've got to say, yes, we're still campaigning also for the male spouses, and they too have it difficult because for them, after PR, I think they wait 10 years before they can get citizenship.
I think even to get the long-term visit pass is difficult for them because they are usually given 3 months from time to time, and you know, with no, sometimes no definite period when they'll be given the 1 year. And the thing people don't realize is that this 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, as long as it's less than a year, it will not count towards your five-year period of residency. So you've lost all that time. So imagine if you were a male spouse, for example, a male non-citizen spouse, and you have been going on this three-month pass for 5 years. You've lost that 5 years, and you still have to build up another 5 years in order to apply for PR.
And it's a terrible set of circumstances, isn't it, when you have to start thinking about these things in terms of the time that you have to make up and the time, yes, that you have lost. Yeah.
And for me, you know, I just got my PR after 29, 30 years here, and nobody's going to give me back my prime earning years. I'm near retirement age. Actually, I'm at retirement age now. And it's only now that I can work. But at this age, there is no way you're going to earn enough to put your children through university and so on.
With the situation being as it is, and would you say that foreign spouses are generally the main caregivers for their Malaysian families, if not necessarily the main breadwinners?
We are breadwinners. We are the caregivers, though we are non-Malaysians. We have a family, we are parents, and therefore we are the main caregivers as well as the providers for our family. I wouldn't say main, but we have our other spouses, Malaysian spouses with us. But as independently, as individuals, if it's hard to work, then we are not providing our family the best lives they can live. Our families are Malaysians, and this is a Malaysian problem.
I think we end up being the caregivers simply because we cannot go out to work.
That is what I was thinking, yes.
So we have to stay home and work. But even if I came across this case in the newspaper of this wife who was helping her Malaysian husband at a stall, and the officials came along and arrested her for working illegally. And despite the husband's protest that she was helping him in his work and he had allowed her to, and this was a family stall business, they would not, and they jailed her. And the poor husband did not know what to do. I think he was...
And she's not even employed, is she, really?
She's not because, even employed, yeah.
Good God.
But the terms of the... when I came in, the terms that was chopped on my passport was any form of work, whether paid or unpaid.
Does that mean, does
so
that include volunteerism?
Even volunteerism also would not be allowed.
That's terrible.
Actually, when we come in, our passports are stamped, spouse of a Malaysian citizen, prohibited from any form of employment. But now with the chop, once they chop it, they kind of strike that off. But really, the spouse permit should come with the right to work because we have families who are dependent on us. And the other thing that we need to do and is get a letter of permission to work from our husbands. And really, you know, some of the spouses are in difficult situations because their husbands don't give them the permission, and then what happens, it keeps them in very vulnerable positions, especially those who are in domestic violence cases and abuse cases.
Yeah, and why is there a necessity for this letter of permission? I wonder if Malaysian wives, you know, with Malaysian husbands, have to get a letter of permission from their husbands to work.
No, I would imagine that for any independent woman of any stripe at all, this can be very psychologically damaging, you know,
it
the
is.
Notion that you cannot work. Yeah,
yeah. When I sort of drafted up the letter, I told my husband, just don't read it. You just put your John Hancock there, don't read it, and I could take it away.
You could have folded it in half. Yeah. And you are both also making the point that the children that you give birth to and you raise are Malaysians and will be part of the future generations of Malaysia and contribute in very real and meaningful ways to the country. So with considering that, you know, how do you think the Malaysian government needs to adapt their approach to families like yours, which are, you know, with spouses who are non-citizens? How do they need to adapt and change?
Well, we're not saying that we should come in and, you know, be given PR immediately, although that would be really nice. But what we are asking for is due process within a reasonable time frame, and that due process is clearly adhered to in every single case. So we can wait, but I think it's reasonable to tell us that within 2 years, whether we have PR or not in this country, because if given a two-year time period, it gives us then the option of leaving the country and going back to another or trying another country to live as a family. But when you take 15, 30 years, I think that is an unconscionable length of time. Even 5 years in this day and age is an unconscionable length of time to hold somebody's life in abeyance.
Also, I think I can understand that the lack of education and the lack of awareness would mean that many people aren't even aware that 30 years is actually the length of time that they will be waiting. Right? Because that's a possibility.
Because on paper it says 5 years, but then, well, now it is getting easier. We must say that if you apply for PR and you keep following up with the immigration, for sure, it, you know, you will have some results. Also that they must apply for PR, because if you don't apply for PR, then you're just waiting there.
So how did the Foreign Spouse Support Group come about? I'm hearing very clearly that there are issues that need resolution, but how did you find one another? You know, how did this whole thing happen?
Let me start with mine. I actually called a few friends together who had the same problem, but I realized there was a reluctance because they're all non-citizens. And I decided while I'm waiting for PR and I get PR, it'll be nice if I can help all the others, some of the others at least. So I wrote my story and put it online, and I would talk everywhere I went. I'd say, please employ foreign spouses, you know, otherwise it's really difficult for us. And that's where I met Asha.
I had a couple of other friends who were professionals, we decided enough was enough. I think this was probably in our 20-some year of staying here. And many of us had been here for more than a decade. And I thought to myself, even if I never get PR, I have to speak up for the sake of the future generation who comes after me. I think I even said to the head of immigration department here, you know, if you don't give me PR, the then head of immigration, I should say, if you don't give me PR, it doesn't matter, because God's going to give me PR when I'm dead and buried in this country, you know. But I'm here to ask for the sake of the future generation who come after me, so that they will not have the same difficulty and the same vulnerabilities that I had faced when I came in.
And where do you converge? Where do you meet?
Actually, we meet at various NGO events. We have workshops. We write in the media so that people will know also. So whenever there's something new or a new development, we try to write it so that we can reach out. We don't reach out everybody, because we ourselves were busy moms and we just wanted to do this to help others. And now we have a Facebook page, and we can be reached on Foreign Spouse Support Group, as well as emailed at foreignspouses@gmail.com.
We actually have, by word of mouth, we meet through networks, and how we get to know about other foreign spouses, other non-citizen spouses, is because our friends of friends tell them about us and so on. We don't have a formalized structure, because this is why it's called a support group, as you would have any support group. But I think especially Bina feels it, that because cases are coming up more and more of people with no access to justice in this area, we feel the need to have a more concrete form of support for them. So we're kind of exploring the possibility now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very great need out there. Usually what happens is NGOs refer their cases to us, and we in turn advise these spouses. Sometimes we can't handle it ourselves, so we pass it on to other bigger NGOs to handle the cases.
And currently, you know, specifically in what ways do you advocate? So you have workshops, and that creates a lot of awareness as well as education. How do you advocate for people who maybe are going through very specific legal situations or very specific, you know, problems?
We actually refer some of those to the NGOs. And what we have done actually is, like, CEDAW has actually documented the cases of foreign spouses and the difficulties that have been faced, that are faced by foreign spouses.
We, the Malaysian NGOs brought out a CEDAW report. You know, every whichever international human rights instruments that Malaysia is signatory to, there are time periods for them to give more or less a progress report. Alongside that, in some countries they work hand in hand with NGOs or civil society organizations. And in other countries, the government will give their report and the NGOs will have their own report. So the CEDAW report has brought has been brought out for the last reporting stage. And in that report, we had a section where we talked about the problems that we faced. Because under the terms of CEDAW, it's a discrimination against the... if you have a male foreign spouse or a male non-citizen spouse, is discriminating the Malaysian citizen woman in terms of, you know, the access that she has to the full range of citizenship rights, and vice versa for that, you know. And the other process that we also have been able to be a part of is the Universal Periodic Review, which is a report that comes out every 2 years. Yeah. 3 years on the state of human rights in this country, so we were able to put in a couple of paragraphs for that as well.
And the child rights report as well, because it also impinges on the rights of children who are born to non-citizen
spouses.
Yes.
Yep. And do you think that the ways that foreign spouses are currently handled is ultimately a violation of human rights? It's a big question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, in certain ways, especially for the women who are widowed and who don't have the right to stay in this country with their Malaysian children. If you don't have the right to livelihood, then definitely it impinges on your human rights. I think...
What is the human right? It's a necessity. I think people get, you know, up in arms over this word right because they think of it as a militancy. But the word right is actually correctly translated, more properly translated in all these human rights instruments as basic needs to survive.
That you must be able to fulfill.
That you must be able to. So what is the basic need? The ability to work, to have a sustainable lifestyle. And the ability to live as to the fullness of all the talents that's been built into you, you know, and to be able to express it. So, yeah, if your definition are meeting the basic needs of any human being, well, the needs of foreign spouses to be able to meet those and the capacity that is allowed to them is not there.
And you've mentioned how, you know, your families are Malaysian families, and that's an important distinction to be drawing. We could argue until the cows come home about what it means to be a national of any country.
Yeah.
But how important do you think it is for, you know, non-citizen spouses to feel a sense of identity and belonging in Malaysia?
I think we, you know, for someone to uproot himself or herself from the country of origin and to focus on trying to make a success of life in the country of residency or the country that they have determined to make their home already says a lot about their willingness and the drive to plant roots in this country and to make a better life for the generations that they are raising. I am personally interested in anything that makes it better for Malaysians generally, because I know ultimately if I work towards making life better for Malaysians and advocating for change in laws and policies that make life better for Malaysians, ultimately my own children benefit, because then they are able to grow up in a fully participative citizenship and society that will build the community for the good of all concerned. So yeah, if you say, that are we interested in improving life in Malaysia? Yes, we are. Are we interested in improving life for our children and our relatives in Malaysia? Yes, we are. And we would not want to jeopardize that in any way. And I think I would want to leave it at that. Yeah.
You know, you're coming from a different country. You've uprooted yourself. You're trying to adjust, to make that adjustment process easier. It would be better if we can be given PR. As well as we're making it, we want our Malaysian families to live their best life. That being said, the difficulties, yes, also stresses the marriage itself and creates a... it's not the best life even for the children. You know, the transnational marriages, first of all, are difficult. But, you don't want this kind of state policy to make the difficulties even more glaring.
Mm. And this is a situation that, of course, takes something personal and puts it on, a legislative level almost. So that's very, very difficult. My final question would be, what could be done to improve the lives of foreign spouses in Malaysia? I think we've kind of scattered it throughout the interview, but what concrete ways do you think, would really help?
To get permanent residency
within
the time frame of, say, 2 to 3 years is reasonable. More than that really is creating stress on the family.
And while you're waiting for that to come through, to have the right to work. And without any of these ridiculous conditions that say, you need a letter of permission from the husband.
And yes, and we would advise all spouses out there, if you finished your 5-year tenure on the long-term social visit pass, please go ahead and apply for permanent residency. The immigration officers nowadays are quite friendly, so do go and apply for permanent residency. It is essential.
Yeah, I must say the immigration services have improved over the 30 years that I've been here.
They had better.
Yeah. But still, we wish that some of these due process things would be
shortened
and more in place.
And again, for people who would like to get in touch with you, where should they go?
We are on Facebook, and it's called Foreign Spouses Support Group. We can be reached by on Gmail, and it's foreignspouses@gmail.com. All the NGOs are pretty familiar with us. WAO can lead you to us, as well as Tenaga Netra, KAMSA. They've all been helping us and been a tremendous support to foreign spouses.
Thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Asha Lim and Bina Ramanan, and they're both from the Foreign Spouse Support Group. You've been listening to The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.